Yes, folks, here I am. I am Maurice from A Handyman's Haven, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, the voice with your trusted local news and talk. Many of you have just tuned in, and I appreciate that very much. If you plan on staying for the hour after me with Jeff Prather, he's now on at 1 p.m. on Sundays, and so you probably missed him for this weekend, but remember that for next weekend, that Jeff Prather, the Prather Point, will be on at 1 p.m. on Sundays. So A Handyman's Haven, our Tucson location is at 1724 South 6th Avenue. That puts us six blocks south of 22nd Street on 6th Avenue as you go southbound. Our phone number is 520-624-7200. Our hours of operation are from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Closed on Sundays and several of the holidays, major holidays, or the individual holidays throughout the year. We have a Green Valley location, which is at the northern end of Green Valley, off of the Duval Mine Road exits, coming on I-19. That's probably the easiest way to get there if you do live in the Green Valley area and is listening. We thank you very much for patronizing our showroom store in Green Valley. There is a way of getting there weaving through the streets of Green Valley itself. But for the rest of the people that may be coming from southern Arizona, the southeastern portion and that, getting off that off of I-19 on the Duval Mine Road exits, immediately get into the left-hand lane as you approach the frontage road, and then you can head further south and pick up 125 West Calle de los Tiendas, and it's Suite 103. I like to say that many individuals in that area know of the Mexican food restaurant Manuel's, and if you walk out the front door of Manuel's and continue on across Calle de las Tiendas, you'll basically walk right into the strip center that houses our showroom in Green Valley. The phone number in Green Valley is 520-369-4858. Hours of operation are Monday through Friday. They're closed Saturday and Sunday, and the hours are about 8:30 in the morning to 4 p.m. In the afternoon. They are closed at various time periods. The good thing about technology today, if you do use the phone number for Green Valley, and after a period of time, it will ring back up in Tucson, and we can pick up the phone and address the issues that you may have concerning working with A Handyman's Haven. I want to express my thanks. I shouldn't say I want to. I express my thanks to those that called into the store this past week about various questions that came up during the radio show last weekend. Those that you came in, that came in and offered suggestions and other questions concerning items of your concerns and offered ideas and suggestions. So I appreciate that very much, as all of us do. With A Handyman's Haven. So keep that up. It's always encouraging to talk to you and also very educational in the things that you have of concern that we may be able to address. We do have a lot of experience with our personnel at A Handyman's Haven. Our design experience all runs into 30 or 40 years. We have a lot of contractor remodeling experience on behalf of myself and our general manager, as well as our mill shop manager. So we can handle quite a few extensive remodeling projects, and we do have a good referral base to assist you in what is taking place in your suggested modifications at home. So some of the activities, as we have talked in the past, I think it's important to let you know what our capabilities are. We did have an individual cabinet order that came in about a week ago that was a little bit not as we ordered it, and therefore we had to go through extensive modifications to reduce the lead time that would be needed to bring in an entire brand new cabinet system. This happens on occasion. It's unfortunate, But the interesting thing is that we at Ahaney Men's Haven have the capability of extensively changing, modifying the cabinet in order to complete the original design and request that the customer has. This is something that we're very proud of and gives us a tremendous capability as far as solving our problems that come about, whether they're ours per se or they happen to be the manufacturer or transportation department that hauls all our equipment in. From that standpoint, it's rather interesting on a certain aspect. We probably receive not necessarily full truckloads, but we offload various sizes of product, somewhere up to 15 or 20 trucks a week. That's quite extensive with the operation that we have going in the Tucson facility. Countertops, I talk about this a lot. We do a lot of countertops. It's a major portion of our business these days. We do promote all countertops except for stainless steel or tile. Those, we have to sub that out or suggest other avenues to accomplish that for you. But on any other type of countertop, that is a laminate countertop or a natural stone countertop, we have fabricators that work with us continually and promote that, as well as we do all the in-house laminate countertops from that standpoint. We basically handle 12-foot pieces of most of the countertops. That includes the bar countertops as well as the integrated backsplash countertops for the vanities, as well as the kitchen areas, islands, or the countertops that you may want to use in your garages, your workshop, craft room, commercial installations, front counters. A while back, we did the complete cabinet and counter arrangement for a store that opened up in Tucson. We're very proud to do that, and we do have the capability of handling those types of countertops. So keep us in mind for that. The other interesting thing is that many times individuals think that laminate countertop is not a good countertop. It was designed originally by the Formica company in the 1900s. They still are the leader in the industry of providing laminate. Today they have taken digital photography of many pieces of natural stone and put them on laminates, which is on a sheet of paper, so to speak, of which it's glued to a wood substrate. And from about 10 feet away, many people cannot tell whether it's a laminate countertop or a natural stone. There is a way of identifying it rather rapidly, but you have to get within hand touching of the countertop itself. But 12 feet of countertop with an integrated backsplash starts out at Ahaney Man's Haven at $108. All straight cuts associated with that countertop are complimentary or free, as sometimes we like to say. Side splashes and miter cuts are an additional cost factor that raises a countertop there, so you can take it home after you order it and install it. And if you have the expertise of installing it, you'll have your beautiful countertop in place with all the appropriate cuts that are required. So keep that in mind from that standpoint. We've come to the end of our first segment here. I'll talk a little bit more about countertops and the advantages and disadvantages of them after our first segment here. We'll have Kent, our production engineer, take it away. We're transmitting on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk in the Ahaney Man's Haven radio. Welcome back to the Hammer Time radio show. I am Maurice from Ahaney Man's Haven. On behalf of my wife and I, we are the sole owners of Ahaney Man's Haven. We're transmitting today in the Ahaney Man's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. In a previous segment, we've been discussing laminate countertops. I did mention to you that 12 feet of a laminate countertop starts out at Ahaney Man's Haven at $108. All straight cuts are complimentary, and then the miter cuts and the end capping and side splashes have a slide-up charge in order to complete the countertop for you. So it gives a person a good idea on what the expense of the countertop would be. We also have the capability of making countertops in our facility, and not only can we put on the square edge, which is typical of the 1900s, but we also have add-on edges that we can do that will give you a rounded edge in the front. Of course, that does incur a little more of additional expense. From that standpoint, most of it when we make a countertop is only for the material only. A lot of these things come in 12-foot sticks, just like the sheet goods accomplishes for the basic material for countertops. So a little bit about the characteristics of these countertops. Most people get involved with what goes on in society and how to live with the Joneses. So when the natural stone products came out years ago, that was the big thing. And I can remember people talking about, boy, got to have a granite countertop or a marble countertop. They were paying in excess of $100 per square foot in order to get those countertops put in their home. And therefore, laminate was still the primary countertop. But if you wanted to live with the Joneses, then that's what you did. You expensed out those very expensive countertops. Well, there are some downsides to natural products, such as stone, could be granite as we know it, marble, travertine, slate, soapstone. All natural stone countertops are porous. So what that means is that if you do nothing to your countertop at all, as far as any preventative maintenance goes, ongoing preventative maintenance for any natural stone product, which normally requires sealing, that every time that you wipe and clean that countertop, if there's any food particles or anything else on it, you are impregnating the pores with the food particles that are there. Well, all of us know that if food sets around in common temperatures, that it develops mold and algae. In fact, I did discuss a while back that mold and algae, and algae, by the way, can also develop in steam irons or in the packs that you read for breathing at nighttime, the CPACs. Those things need to be kept clean and so on and so forth. So it's been a major concern, not just recently, but for a long period of time. I think most of us can remember how long ago the steam iron first came out, and there was much discussion at certain time periods that it takes organic material in order to develop mold and algae, and that's not true at all. If it could develop in a steam iron, which happens to be in a metal container, and there's no organic process in there, one may wonder how you can develop mold and algae. Well, it happens to be in the water. That's where it comes from. Water comes from the earth. There's purification methods for it. But many times, if you're on your own personal well system, you may be just drinking water right out of the aquifer from that standpoint. So as a result of that, a laminate countertop is what we call antimicrobial. It's stain resistant, not so of natural stones, and it will not develop mold or algae once it's wiped down from that standpoint. So it's a tremendous advantage, especially with that aspect. It gives you all those important criteria, and then it's also less in cost. When you start adding some other activities to a laminate countertop, in other words, you change the edges due to today's technology and put the rounded edges on the front of it, of which there's about 10 or 12 different rounded edges that can be accomplished, then the countertop raises in price. Also, being that we're a capitalistic environment, since people love natural stone to such an extent, such as marble and soapstone and travertine and things of that nature, we can get that in laminate also. But the manufacturers of those sheet goods that requires to produce those countertops realize that the American public may like those type of things. So since it's more in demand than the standard laminate countertop of years ago, which were mostly only natural colors of some sort, I'm not necessarily proud, but I can tell you I have a Harvest Gold countertop on our countertop at home. I do not have a Harvest Gold refrigerator or a Harvest Gold stove. We got rid of those several years ago. That was one of the characteristic things, and that the color was pretty prevalent during the mid-1900s. That in itself, with today's digital photography and taking pictures of many things, that we can design countertops that are lookalikes and does a lot more than the natural stone products or quartz products. Quartz products are antimicrobial and stain resistant, so that is a tremendous added feature. It's also a non-porous product. So there's lots of good countertops out there, depending upon what your qualification is for your countertops and how much money you want to spend, of which is truthful in almost everything that we do in today is, you know, do we have the money to expense our taste from that standpoint? So if you have any questions concerning the discussion going on today and throughout the program, give us a call here at the online lines that we have on 520-790-2040. In fast repetition, that would be 520-790-2040. That'll get us in no matter where you call, and especially in today's cell phones from throughout the United States. We are streaming live off of KVOI, where there are podcasts available off of a KVOI also, AM 1030. So keep that in mind. The next thing I'd like to talk about is lead and asbestos in homes. Many time periods, as life continues in the construction field, certain materials are used continually. You can go back to the early 1900s and see the materials that were used. And then as the chemical aspect of our world kept developing with major companies that we have in the United States, such as DuPont as an example, which is one of the global chemical companies. Then there's many other that are internationally. LG is another prime example of a major chemical company in a global status. But in the early years, when paints first came available to paint the inside of the house or the outside of the house, they used whatever materials and chemicals that would produce what they felt at that time period a good product. And most of the time, unless there was some obvious thing that occurred, the human aspect of these materials were not determined to be infallible from that standpoint. But as we know, lead paint and lead particles and anything that we work with can become a difficult operation. I even remember back in the 1950s and 60s, mercury as an example. We had mercury light switches that would allow conductivity to occur. That so when you turn the light on, they were silent. You didn't hear the click when you move the switch or the click when you moved it to off. They had mercury in there, and it provided the conductivity needed. We used to break down those old mercury light switches, and we used to get our dimes and pennies and shine them up with our fingers and with the mercury that was there, and didn't think anything about that. I cannot tell you, nor do I know, of how many people may have gotten sick from using mercury on their fingers. But as today we think about it, having coins like that in mercury and they're all over your fingers, and we use them to pick up food and eat with it, and that, who knows what was taking place. But anyway, lead paint or paint that consumed or had lead components in it was all outlawed from 1978. So most homes that were built and had painted walls in pre-1978 has lead quality particles in the paint in that home. So if the home has never been repainted, as an example, and the colors are still there, I do remember that when I purchased my house, in that case, that the lead paint was still on the walls. But it can be encapsulated. And what I mean by that is that you can cover up the paint that's on the walls. However, in today's society, it's requested that you do not sand the paint, you do not scrape the paint, you do not chip it, or so on and so forth. Because then it becomes what we say as friable. And that means there's particles all over the air, and you may be breathing them, and so on and so forth. So, during common renovation of a home that is pre-1978, one needs to be very, very careful in the activities and repairing. So, Andy, sanding, cutting, chipping, replacing windows that is going to disturb the lead paint, whether it's inside the home or outside the home, can create the lead dust and chips that may be harmful to adults, harmful to children, and also harmful to pets. Pets do not realize the thought process that goes into what they want to eat, what they are going to consume, so on and so forth. Ever since I've had pets in my life, I can tell you dogs, cats, whatever it happens to be, every now and then they get to be sick. And as a result of that, it may be that they've consumed things in the backyard, front yard, or if they're within a big 1 acre, 2 acre plot or something, anything that grows in that facility. So that could be a serious problem from that standpoint. So just common renovation or remodeling can create a problem for you. If you do not have the capability and you suspect that you're going to do some heavy remodeling, the contractor that you should hire should be one that has been certified to handle lead paint in the homes. If you're the homeowner, though, it's rather interesting that the federal government does not have any restriction on what the homeowners want to do. So if they want to renovate, they want to repair, and they want to paint their homes themselves, sand it down, chip it off, so on and so forth, all that is suggested is that you set up some sort of safety control so you can control the dust and clean up properly. That may be using a respirator-type mask system, maybe something for your eyes, maybe using a glove for your, like a latex glove or anti-latex-type gloves in order to do that accomplishment. But if you're going to hire someone out to do all this contracting, the suggestion is that with tearing down walls and renovating homes, and I have known individuals who have tore out all the interior wall structures of their homes and started with a brand new floor plan. When you get involved in that in a pre-78 home, you are definitely going to be faced with a lot of lead activity from that standpoint. So if you have any questions concerning this, you can give us a phone call here on the online representation of 520-790-2040. We've completed our second segment on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. And I'll have the production engineer take us away, and we'll come back after the break. Well, welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter into the conversation today with comments or what your project is that you're working on, please give us a call online. Phone number is 520-790-2040. We'll entertain your thoughts and suggestions and try to answer any question that you may have. In the last segment, we were talking a little bit about lead. One of the other hazardous materials that we have found in homes over the years is asbestos. Asbestos, as you know, just like lead, can be carcinogenic, and therefore it can be a problem. It has been restricted from use, especially in schools and also in many home activities as well as in many construction materials. As most of us know, asbestos is a good fire retardant. I do know many years ago when I used to do a lot of silk screening of paper goods, designs, so to speak, as well as T-shirts and et cetera. We're in the process of building a heating oven, so to speak, and we were using asbestos to do that. Thought nothing of it. Went down and bought a 4x8 sheet of a 1/4-inch asbestos and cut it up and made it into an oven and used extensive heat lamps, heat lighting light bulbs, so to speak, in order to create the heat that needed to harden up the acrylic paint that was being used for silk screening. So many of these items were common in use. So many of the construction materials that could or may have included asbestos would be the insulation in the homes. Now, this may be insulation in the walls. This may be the insulation in what we call CMUs, concrete masonry units. Those are the gray blocks that are used, were used to build homes quite extensively. They used to use vermiculite as an example to put down the holes that were in the blocks. As many of you know, everybody thought those little partitions in the blocks were really nice and very creative, but they were designed for nothing more than the mason to hold onto the block as he set it on the mortar that glued one block to another block as they were building the walls. I have to admit that in my younger years, I was considered a not a block layer or a red brick layer, but a hod carrier. And that is, we had hods, so to speak, that you loaded up with bricks or blocks and you carried them to the mason, put them up on his scaffolding in order to build the homes, etc. Also was responsible for using a lot of lime as an example, which can be hazardous, the chemical aspect of it, in preparing the mortar that the mason needed in order to set the blocks in position. And at that time period, I thought I was making pretty good money. It was at the tune of 50 cents per hour. That was back in the 1950s and 60s of the last century. So other things other than insulation, your roofing and siding shingles, a lot of that had asbestos in it. Ceiling tiles in the homes or in commercial installations were impregnated with asbestos. Vinyl floor tiles, the backing on vinyl sheet flooring and adhesives. That was pretty common when you wanted to put something down on your floor. It was called linoleum or congoleum or things of that nature. And that's the type of sheet goods that were used, as well as the building products were used to put between a concrete floor and the sheet goods. Also, the building material, probably about 15-pound felt, was used as a template in order for the flooring layer to lay that flooring that you needed as a sheet goods. Paper products may have had some asbestos in them. Cement products may have had asbestos. Textured paint and patching compounds. Walls and floor around wood-burning stoves. Why around wood-burning stoves? Well, it's pretty simple. You got a fire in a wood-burning stove, a fire around a fireplace and things like that, and you need to protect it. Many of the water pipes and steam pipes were either coated or wrapped with asbestos. Hot water steam pipes were coated with asbestos material, or they're covered with asbestos blanket, or there's asbestos tape. I can remember the tapes. I can remember a lot of piping that was coated with asbestos from that standpoint. So many of the homes also that were built before 1978 have popcorn ceilings. I remember living in a condominium in Houston, Texas in the 70s and 80s, and it had popcorn ceilings. Never thought too much about it, that it had asbestos in it. But many people today, they come into the store and indicate they're going to remove the asbestos in their ceilings, which is great if that is the case. But by removing that, it can be touch and go. In other words, you're making it friable as you try to scrape all that material off. So the materials may release fibers when they are disturbed, damaged, or if they're removed improperly. They could be repaired. That could cause a problem. If it's been cut or torn or sanded or sawed or drilled or scraped, you're going to have that friable material skating throughout the home. It's going to get in your furniture, in the clothing. It's going to get in the rugs and so on and so forth. So keep that in mind. when you want to accomplish items of that nature. Again, when it comes to asbestos and the EPA standards, the Environmental Protection Agency, the homeowner can do all that, but who knows what you're going to be susceptible to if you do not have the proper certification in order to get it done. If you're going to test something out and you think you want to remove this, a sample of what you're doing to take it down to a testing facility, the trade magazine that I read concerning this says, do not take samples yourself. So get a professional to do this, folks. Save your time from having a lingering effect of these products that may come not today or tomorrow, but may come sometime in the future, and you may wonder what takes place. I can say from a personal aspect, I won't burden you with the big story, but what may happen to you when you're in the youth or as you're growing up can provide a major impact in your health when you get up into what I call the high maturation level of life. Some people may wonder why I call that, and it's rather interesting. I've come upon the phrase that supposedly, we talk about it in youth as an example, that the maturation of a young child growing up, he or she may be more mature than the age dictates. Well, I think when you get older, let's hope that the high maturation level of the senior citizen in our life, due to the environment they've been associated to, the experiences that they've had, and the education, that they are more intelligent than their age should dictate. So, limit for slightly damaged asbestos containing material, limit your access to the area and not to touch or disturb it. If it is slightly damaged or you are going to make changes in your home that might disturb it, a trained and accredited asbestos professional is needed. I know I've gone through some introductory courses on lead abatement. I haven't been involved with asbestos abatement, but it is quite extensive from that standpoint. So here's the do's with asbestos. Leave undamaged asbestos-containing materials alone. Keep activities to a minimum in any areas having damaged material that may contain asbestos. Remember, homes that were built in pre-78 may have extensive asbestos in them in various capacities, as we even talked about popcorn-type ceilings. Take every precaution to avoid damaging asbestos-containing material. Have removal and major repair done by individuals that are trained and qualified in handling asbestos. You may wonder, well, how am I going to determine that if somebody says that he's an asbestos expert? Ask him for a certificate of his accreditation. That's the best way to find out. Have sampling and minor repair done by a trained and accredited asbestos professional. Here's some of the things that you should not do. Do not store boxes or other items in your attic. Of course, attics aren't prevalent necessarily in southern Arizona, but you may have an attic to the extent of the gable roof, depending upon whatever you have, but do not store it up there from that standpoint. Your attic may contain vermiculite insulation. You know, we talked about that in the CMUs, the concrete masonry units. I can remember that was the extensive thing utilized in laying up concrete blocks because that provided additional insulation between the outside atmosphere and the inside of the home. The only time that would probably be tampered with is if you're running some new lines and you're cutting into the block walls or you're trying to change some of the composition of your home. Do not allow children in an attic. Again, we don't have too many of those in the southern Arizona with vermiculite insulation. Do not attempt to remove the insulation yourself. Do not dust, sweep, or vacuum the debris up because that'll be in your vacuum cleaner, and who knows what's going to happen when you change your vacuum cleaner around to a blower instead of a vacuum system. Do not use abrasive pads or brushes on power strippers to strip wax from asbestos flooring. Never use a power stripper on flooring that may contain asbestos. So if you've had glued down squares or planks of flooring like it was back in the 1900s, Be very careful when removing that. Do not sand or try to level asbestos flooring or its backing. When asbestos flooring needs replacing, install a new floor covering over it if possible. That would be the term we call encapsulating it, like we did the paint as far as lead paint goes. Do not track material that contain asbestos through the house. In other words, take your shoes off, keep them outside or whatever you're going to do. Try not to walk on carpeting, etc. If you cannot avoid walking through the area, have it cleaned with a wet mop. If the material is from a damaged area or if a large area must be cleaned, call an asbestos professional. Very important things to remember, folks, when working with lead and asbestos. If you are determined to remove the popcorn ceiling or chip paint yourself, safeguards are listed and outlined by the EPA, and you can go online in order to review those. Keep that in mind, folks. You need to stay safe in your own personal home. We've completed the third segment on AM 1030 The Voice with your trusted local news and talk in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio. And we'll see you after the break, folks. Take it away, Kent. Welcome back to the Hammer Time radio show. As our house is always a very, very fine house, very important because that's where we live. I am Maurice from A. Handyman's Haven, transmitting in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice with your trusted local news and talk. A. Handyman's Haven has two store locations, one in Tucson at 1724 South 6th Avenue, six blocks south of 22nd Street in the big yellow building on the west side of the street. Phone number in Tucson is 520-624-7200. We have a Green Valley location at 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103. Phone number on location in Green Valley is 520-369-4858. We just finished a big session on lead and asbestos and how to take care of that in homes. Right now we'll talk about some woodworking techniques that occur in most homes. It has happened quite frequently lately when individuals come in and are looking for moldings. And how do you join moldings? What is the length of moldings today? So when we are doing baseboard or trim molding of that nature, many of the pieces of molding that we're able to get or obtain from our distributors are in 16-foot sticks, as we call them, or 16 feet in length. And that gives you quite an array of accomplishment when you're laying down the molding and reduces the number of joints that you have to make in a room. Most people think about molding, and they try to think about the cost being the lowest they can probably get it at, and therefore they buy just the bare minimum that they need. But one way to take a look at this, if it comes in a 16-foot sticks and you have, if you have a 16-foot by 16-foot room, that's a room that's about 250-some square feet, and you figure how much molding you need. Of course, if you're buying 8-foot sticks, because that's the molding it comes in, that length, you're going to have a lot of joints. So the 16-foot sticks are quite important when it comes to that extent of putting the molding down. If you are forced to use 8-foot sticks or 10-foot sticks, whatever is available, then you have a joinery situation that you're going to have to contend with. And one of the situations I'm going to talk about as far as joints go happen to do with the corners. One thing that may be required is what equipment do you need in order to join the two pieces of molding together? If it's a straight line joint, I think just a 45 degree cut or a miter cut would be very appropriate. But when you get involved with the corners, as an example, how do you join the corners? Even though you even have 16 foot sticks available, the corners are going to be rather difficult. In joining a 45 degree miter, which is typical half of a 90 degree corner, this does require some finesse and accomplishedness. Take a look with a square as an example. Put it on the corner and see if your wall, your two corners are, or your corner is at 90 degrees. The two walls form a 90 degree corner. I'm going to depart at the present time. We have a caller, Leah. Thank you for calling in, and how may I assist you today?
Hello, Maurice. You know, I was listening to the last session about the different ways to remove potentially or dangerous type of materials at your home or wherever you're working. And, you know, the lesson I just said for everyone is leave it to the professionals if you're unsure. Because, you know, I remember hearing the story, the HGTV, they give, you know, you have different winners of homes. And one of the winners won one of the homes, and so that's a blessing, right? Next thing you know, the person was remodeling their own, I guess, attic, Maurice, and they end up dying. They had some type of mold. The spores got in their lungs, and they died. And I said, that's just a horrible thing. So I would just say that if I have to save up monies or what have you, I would just say do what it takes and leave it to the professional. So anyway, have a blessed day.
Well, I appreciate that comment very much, and that is one of the items that is of a serious concern to anybody, and no matter what project you do, leave it to the professionals or the individual that have a tremendous amount of experience from that standpoint. You can ask for certain certifications, like I mentioned earlier, and when it comes to those really ticklish type items, leave it to them. Yes, it may cost you a little bit more money, but you do have many avenues of recourse if things do end up going south, as we say, in reference to that. So we appreciate phone calls like that, especially from listeners who have had experiences in the past. So we're talking about trim right now, and I did bring up the subject about a coping saw. There may be many people out there listening today that have no idea what a coping saw is. It's a very, very thin-bladed saw that basically you could cut circles with that saw without much difficulty at all, especially with your expertise as a do-it-yourselfer. This will allow you, when it comes to the corner, where two pieces of molding are going to be joined together on supposedly a 90-degree corner. Now, we would like to say that all homes that have two walls joined together at 90 degrees, that the corner is going to be exactly at 90 degrees. Well, I can say, folks, that if that is the case, you could be an excellent contractor, and you'd be in great demand throughout the entire world as far as that goes in putting together walls and homes. As many times as I've ever seen a home, especially in the countertops we have to template and manufacture, I don't think there's a 90-degree corner consistently in any home that's around. There may be one or two, but they always seem not to be associated with the areas that where we really like to have a 90-degree corner. And molding would be one of them, whether it's the ceiling or whether it's the floor or wherever you have a 90-degree corner. So as you bring a piece of molding into the corner, one of it can be straight right up against the next wall, the 90-degree wall. And then the other piece that's going to join it can be coped, or it could be rounded in order to form the molding profile that you're going to join it up against. And that way you'll get a nice, good fit. It may take some sandpaper. It'll take a coping saw. It may take a rasp file, a rounded rasp file, or things of that nature to assist you in providing that. So you can keep trying it as you keep sanding it down and cutting it or moving it into position. And when you get the joint that you perfectly want, then you can cut the straight edge on the other end as far as that goes. That'll give you a nice joint. And when you go to paint it or stain it, whatever it may happen to be, it'll be in really good shape. Coping saws are excellent to use on any form of wood. They may be a little tougher on the harder woods than the softer woods. Most molding today that is utilized with MDF, medium density fiberboard, a lot of people don't like it, but a tremendous advantage of that type of molding is it can conform and bend to the irregularities of the walls as you move it along the floor or along the ceiling. If you're going to do a cove crown molding in your ceiling or even on the top of your cabinetry from that standpoint. So keep that in mind when you're trying to put molding down. 16-foot sticks are great to have, but the joining of the molding is always a touch-and-go environment unless you know the little tricks of the trade like I've just examined to you. Well, I appreciate being with you very much this Sunday afternoon. It's a great day outside, and on behalf of the entire staff at A Handyman's Haven, hope you have a great week coming up, and we'll see you next Sunday on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio.